Stop.
Welcome to the fifth episode of this Stop Button podcast for June 28th, 2009. Happy birthday, if today's your birthday. This episode I'll be discussing Danny the Dog, directed by Louis Lattier, Underworld, directed by Len Wiseman, and Point of No Return, directed by John Badham.
Danny the Dog is better than it should be. It's not as good as it could have been, but it's definitely better than it should be. It's this incredibly simple story. It might be entirely free of subplots. I mean, it's never clear how Morgan Freeman can afford such a nice apartment, just tuning pianos. Bob Hoskins' character is as evil as the bad guy in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. In the film, maybe for the first time ever that I've seen, having only seen three Jet Li movies, Lethal Weapon 4, Romeo Must Die, and this one, uses him better than his, I guess, limited, I don't know if it's limited English, but instead of casting Lee as Jack Tripper, FBI agent, it casts him in a appropriate role, and he can turn in a really good performance while still doing all of his physical stuff. Lee's very likable, maybe because he's so diminutive. And it doesn't hurt that Louis Lattier is a great director. Besides the Hulk movie, which still is his crowning achievement, not for the comic book malarkey, but for the just general direction. He did some of the Transporter movies, maybe the first two, but I don't remember either of those being as accomplished as this one. But it's another film where I can't really understand how they thought American audiences were going to attach themselves to it. It was called Unleashed over here, and I don't remember much about it. I think when I read the reviews, or not even reviews, but maybe a capsule review, and saw Morgan Freeman's name in the credits, I was sure it was some kind of typo. And there are some problematic, well, there's some very problematic parts of the film. As a screenwriter, Besson takes a very easy route for the film, one where he has to think less about the action-packed sequences, the finale, than he would otherwise. And considering Besson's best movies, The Fifth Element, which sort of turns taking the easy route into a art form, in a way probably not done since, it's unfortunate he didn't push with Danny the Dog. Because, you know, Morgan Freeman's always good, I think. I don't think I've ever come out of something and said Morgan Freeman was bad, even in bad movies. Getting good performance out of Freeman's kind of like shooting in Panavision aspect ratio and getting 2:35:1. I mean, that's just what you get. But the real surprise of the film is Carrie Condon, who plays Freeman's stepdaughter, and the whole black guy with the white stepdaughter thing is never addressed, probably because it was made by a bunch of Frenchmen, but I'm curious how that played in the U.S. Wonder if they CG'd somebody else in for the stepdaughter over here. Condon is sort of the glue of the film, and is way similar to, oh, maybe not. For some reason I thought there was another Besson film where the, oh no, it was the other Jet Li. It was Romeo Must Die, where he and the girl don't actually have a romantic relationship. Here, there's not exactly hints at one, because, you know, Jet Li's twice as old as Carrie Condon, but I don't think he's supposed to be twice as old as Carrie Condon. There's this definite chemistry, which seemingly comes all from her, and I was shocked she hasn't been in more. It's a very accomplished performance, and it's unfortunate this movie got released in the U.S. as Unleashed, because, I mean, overall it doesn't live up to its potential, but Condon's performance, along with Lattier's direction and Besson's smart before it gets easy script, are all excellent elements. Hoskins is a little bit of a problem. He's actually rather dynamic as this villain, but he's so one-dimensional. And Hoskins doesn't do anything to bring an added dimension to him. You know, Morgan Freeman does that with the way he delivers a line. He suggests he's thinking about something. Hoskins is playing this one-dimensional bad guy and doesn't bring anything to it. He gets a C, I guess, right? That's average. The supporting cast other than... No, the supporting cast entirely is kind of a blur. The fight scenes are excellent. Kept wondering if they had to slow down the camera for Jet Li in this one. And especially in the first quarter, it really seems like the best way to use Li, because it's using him not just as an actor, but also his martial arts ability. And the difference between that and some action movie, Danny the Dog, like I said before, it presents a reasonable explanation for the character being where he is. Unfortunately, when Bassan makes the big shift in the script, he cheats the viewer out of some promise scenes like Jet Li versus Glasgow Street Thugs, or, well, that's the big one. But it's good stuff. It's been a long time since I've stopped watching something simply out of boredom. I walked on the first Harry Potter movie to go have lunch, because there was no point in watching any more of it. Usually if something's bad, I give it about 20 minutes. I figure 20 minutes is fair. Underworld, without realizing it, I gave 45. I was looking for something stupid to watch, something mindlessly diverting, and it seemed like a good choice. I'd been putting off seeing it for 6 years, seeing as how it sort of kicked off the downfall of Kate Beckinsale, the actress. And I think I'd seen Scott Speedman in Dark Blue and was unimpressed. And I knew Michael Sheen was in it, but I kinda didn't believe it. And after seeing him in this, it's even harder to believe. Len Wiseman got a lot of flack online for Die Hard 4, but he was fine directing it. I mean, I guess I'd call him a Rennie Harlan knockoff. And Underworld's action scenes are fine. It's when they try to have this story, it falls apart. And there's a lot of story to it, and a lot of needless scenes, and a lot of complications, and complexities, and blah, blah, blah. Waka, 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 yada, yada, yada. That a former stuntman wrote it isn't much of a surprise. That it got greenlit without a rewrite from someone capable is surprising. Some of it looks cheap, some of it doesn't. It's idiotic. Kate Beckinsale kinda seems like she can handle being in this piece of crap, but then other times it's really clear there's contempt of it, which I suppose they thought worked for the character, but it really doesn't, because she and Speedman have sort of a negative amount of energy, chemistry. Speedman's not bad. I don't know if I believe he's an intern, but he's not anywhere near as bad as I figured he'd be. Michael Sheen's pretty awful. Seeing, say, Frost Nixon or the Queen and then seeing this, it's horrifying, unbelievable. Trying to think. Shane Broly's really bad. Sophia Miles isn't terrible. Wentworth Miller's probably about as good as he is on Prison Break. Kevin Grivo, who co-wrote the story, yeah, he's not very good either. There's a very odd homoeroticism to the werewolves, which is kind of interesting just because you've got the co-story writer playing one of the werewolves, and it's uncommon to see that attributed to werewolves when it's usually the vampires who have that, but not in this one. In this one, the vampires have like some kind of jealousy thing, male-female jealousy. I couldn't care less. What's really unfortunate about it is the setting. Where was it filmed? Somewhere overseas. It was filmed in Budapest. And I think they're trying to... It's like, I'm not sure if it's supposed to be Budapest, because there's this... the doctors are American, and I don't think American medical students go to Budapest to intern. And when you see Speedman's address on the computer, it's in somewhere European. But for maybe 3 seconds, when Speedman and Beckinsale are on some dock somewhere, it reminded me of Delicatessen. And that didn't last. But if they'd kind of done it like Dark City, where it was this weird, all-encompassing city, maybe that would have been interesting. I don't know. They try and avoid talking about it, it appears, which just makes it more annoying. I can't remember. Oh yeah, I turned it off during a Wentworth Miller scene just because I realized it wasn't even half over and it might be 2 hours and 13 minutes depending on the version I was watching, and I really could not put up with that. It's boring. I suppose if you went through and cut it down to about 45 minutes of action scenes, maybe even 70, it'd be okay. But with these story developments and the attempt at character, not development, but motivation, and the queue of vampires, you know, James Bond's queue, but as a vampire, it's just beyond idiotic. And there's no point in watching it. It's not interesting. It doesn't compel you to follow through on the whole thing. And some of it might have to do with most of the cast looking contemptuous of the material. Sheen's bad, but he's still pretty clearly knows that he's not in the right role. Similarly, you know, maybe they did cast Beckinsale to be contemptuous, but when she's accused of having a thing for Speedman, it's so absurd that I think that's when I started getting on the stopping the movie bandwagon. Can't remember how many successful remakes of foreign films in the U.S., like recent foreign films, actually did well. Because in the 90s, back when audiences didn't read subtitles and apparently didn't like dub movies, studios would buy up foreign properties for remaking. More recently, it's the horror movies they did that with, and they kind of knocked that off too. But Point of No Return was supposed to be a big deal. I remember there's a Bridget Fonda quote about how she doesn't read reviews anymore following Point of No Return's reviews. And her getting the role was a big deal. The role was coveted, and so, you know, it meant good things for whoever got it, and it really didn't do anything for her career. You know, it's basically a shot-for-shot remake of Nikita with a script by Robert Getchell, who wrote Mommy Dearest and Tender Mercies, and had some Oscar nominations in the 70s. So presumably Warner figured he would be the classy part of it. It's kind of like getting John Patrick Shanley to adapt Congo. The co-writer, Alexandra Siros, I think the only other thing she worked on was The Specialist, which is terrible too, and I think from Warner. But the real problem with the film's, you know, John Badham. I had a friend who once said that John Badham made bad movies. That was his John Badham response. Badham trying to make this film is ludicrous because it's a very complicated. You gotta make the villain into the hero, the heroes into the villains, that sort of thing. And Badham's best with something like Blue Thunder, where he's got a very high-concept action movie. Point of No Return's not a high-concept action movie. A lot of it is character stuff, and he can't do any of that. He can do action comedy, but he can't with a strong personality, except the point of Point of No Return is Bridget Fonda's personality isn't as strong as anyone else's, like Gabriel Byrne or especially Anne Bancroft. So it's a complete misfire. And it doesn't help that Hans Zimmer's music is absurd. It's from before Zimmer got popular, with The Lion King and whatever. So it's just this... It sounds like the music from Once Upon a Crime, that Whodunit one, with John Candy, James Belushi, Sybil Shepherd, Sean Young, Richard Lewis, all those people, George Hamilton. Same kind of music. I wonder who did the music for that one. That's also a remake of a European film. Richard Gibbs did the music. They should have gotten Richard Gibbs to do the music for Nikita. Just because, not Nikita, When They Return, just because probably done a better job. Or blame it on the bellboy. It's the same kind of score. It's Zimmer giving an action movie a score from a comedy. Harvey Keitel shows up off of his Reservoir Dogs. Return to prominence. Just trying to turn Dermot Mulroney into a movie star with this one. It's just very much of its time. But it's impossible to understand why Warner thought Badham was the right guy for this. Art Linson's not a crappy producer. He's rather high profile. And I guess Bassan turned down the film, but I'm wondering if even someone like, what's his face? If Tony Scott wouldn't have done a better job. But that's the kind of caliber they required for a remake of La Femme Nikita, is somebody like Ridley Scott, not even Tony Scott. They needed Ridley Scott coming off of Thelma and Louise to make this film, and they got John Badham instead, and he made a really boring movie.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Stop Button Podcast. The website's still available at www.thestopbutton.com. Feel free to email any comments to thestopbutton@gmail.com or leave them on iTunes.